You know what you won't get when you support independent media and pledge your support at rabble.ca/donate? No tote bag, no pens, no mugs. It's not a swag thing. Pledging at rabble.ca/donate keeps Rabble's news and views for the rest of us surviving and maybe even thriving. That's rabble.ca/donate. See you there.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Last November, BC Minister of Advanced Education Naomi Yamamoto tabled a piece of legislation that would make many amendments to post-secondary institutions. Most of the amendments triggered little controversy. However, a fundamental change to university and college governance was buried within Bill 18. If the bill passes this spring, as it currently reads, governance board members representing instructors and staff could be barred for being active with their unions. Philip Legg is a staff representative with the Federation of Post-Secondary Educators, or FPSE. The FPSE represents over 10,000 post-secondary instructors and staff across BC. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning, Jane. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Now, what does this piece of legislation say about staff and instructors running for election to be representatives on a board of governance?
Well, you've described it well in your opening. There is a small section of a fairly lengthy bill. About 90% of it is housekeeping measures and nothing controversial in it. But in that small 10% of the bill, they are amending the College and Institute Act and the University Act. And the amendments would bar anyone who is active on the executive of their local faculty association or their local union from also standing for election for the position of faculty or staff elected representative on the board of governors of their local institution. And keep in mind that in post-secondary, we call it collegial governance. So there's a shared governance model. And it has been a feature of post-secondary governance for the better part of 100 years in Canada and was brought into legislation to cover colleges and institutes in the 1990s. So it's a well-established practice. And what our concern is that the amendments would effectively suppress freedom of association for anyone who is active in their local faculty association or their local union.
And by active, what do they mean? Do they spell that out?
No, they just have to. You have to be. You're deemed to be active if you're part of the executive. So that's fairly. That's a fairly wide open term because you could be on a number of committees that local unions have, and that would be considered active within your local. So the onus would be on us to try and narrow that scope. But, you know, fundamentally, you're saying to faculty, you have a choice to make. If you want to run for a governance position on the local board of your institution, you have to make a choice between running for that position and being active in your local union. And we say that's that runs counter to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which says you have freedom of association. You shouldn't feel that you have to make a choice between being active in your union and standing for an election on the governance structure.
What justification is the minister giving for this change in the bill?
Very little, quite frankly. We met with her in early December, and it was obvious from that meeting that her understanding of governance within post-secondary institutions was not particularly deep. But she constantly came back to concerns about conflict of interest. But quite frankly, that really doesn't hold a lot of water. There are conflict of interest guidelines that apply to people who are involved in every provincial entity, whether it's a Crown corporation or a regulatory body. And in fact, every post-secondary institution is required to adopt conflict of interest guidelines. So there's lots of good practice already in place to deal with conflict of interest. So I really, you know, we were hard pressed to try and figure out where she was coming from on that one.
It's almost like there's a confusion between an interest and a conflict of interest.
Yeah, well, to be specific on conflict of interest, the guidelines talk very, very clearly about this notion of personal gain, that any director on a public entity cannot be involved in a decision in which there is a clear personal gain to be had from their decision. And the practice, and keep in mind that faculty and staff have been part of boards of governors for post-secondary institutions for many decades, the practice has always been where there are discussions, for example, around bargaining mandates at a particular institution, obviously faculty would exempt themselves from that discussion and decision. I mean, it's done all the time. You can find all sorts of examples in Crown corporations where directors identify that there is potential conflict or perceived conflict, and so they exempt themselves from that particular discussion. But what the minister has done in this particular instance is it's very far-reaching, because it is so offside with basic charter rights. And this is a point that we've pressed both her and her deputy on. And to this point, I'm not convinced that they really understand what the significance of the changes that they are proposing to push through.
I understand that the legislation also allows for removal of elected representatives from boards. How is that supposed to work?
Well, that's one of the more bizarre features of this. Keep in mind that two-thirds of every board of governors of every post-secondary institution is appointed by government. And so they have introduced an amendment that says if two-thirds of a board takes exception to behaviors or whatever of a board member, that two-thirds of a board can pass a resolution to have that board member removed. It's we're going to vote you off the island provision. But that one is particularly odious because it has a huge chill effect. What it's really saying is you either, as a board member, if you're a faculty elected board representative, you have to comply with the behavior of the two-thirds or we'll get rid of you. And think of a minority voice on a board. You're going to think twice about positions that you're going to take and the advocacy that you're going to bring to that board if you knew that hanging over your head was the possibility that at any moment two-thirds of your board colleagues could vote you off. So it's that, too, is very, very damaging.
How would that affect student representation on boards of governance?
It could absolutely affect them. Any minority group on a board, in other words, the people who are not appointed by government, those are the people for whom that particular provision would have a huge chill effect.
If the legislation makes it into law, how is your union going to respond to it?
Well, we've said to the minister and to her deputy that there are some serious constitutional issues here. And we have said that we will, if these provisions are not amended and they go through in the form that they're in right now, that we're going to be drawn into a court challenge on this one. That's not our preferred course. It's a very expensive undertaking. It's a long, drawn-out process, and it is something that usually takes you to the Supreme Court of Canada to try and finally determine what the right outcome should be. Keep in mind that the BC Liberals have repeatedly taken legislative action that the Supreme Court of Canada has had to step in and reverse. We certainly saw that with the health care contract ripping that they did in 2002 and the class size changes that they made. And in both cases, the health or the hospital employees union got a Supreme Court decision that reversed what the government had done, and the same was true for teachers. So the government's batting average on this in terms of constitutional issues is not that impressive. So court action is one. If we can't convince the government to change its mind, it does beg the question, it's time to change the government. And so in about a half an hour, a group of us will be joining others from the labor movement in what's called Labor Day in Port Moody. So we're going to be actively canvassing and campaigning for Joe Trazzolini in an upcoming by-election there. The same will hold true for Chilliwack. And our objective there is to send a very strong message to government. We're not happy with what you're doing, and if you keep doing what you're doing, you probably won't be government in May 2013.
I understand that there's an online letter being you're asking people to send an online letter to Minister Naomi Yamamoto. How would they do that?
Yeah, we have a Facebook campaign, so you can go on Facebook. It's Stop Bill 18, and you can click your way through to a letter that you can send to the minister, urging her to not go through with the changes that she's making to post-secondary governance. We were quite happy with the response that we got. One of the good things about Facebook is that you can quickly mobilize, and I think it was in part because we were able to get close to 1,800 letters into her office in a 48-hour period that convinced them to not move as vigorously with this legislation as they had planned to do in the fall. That said, they have brought it through for second reading, and we won't know until later on in this session whether or not the message of the need for rethink of the bill has got through to the minister.
Okay, Philip, I'll give people the information again about how they can participate in that campaign. And I want to thank you very much for talking to us about it this morning.
No problem at all. Thanks for following the issue.
I've been speaking with Philip Legg. Philip is a staff representative with the Federation of Post-Secondary Educators. If you would like to send that online letter that we were talking about to the Minister of Advanced Education, you can look up Stop Bill 18 on Facebook, or you can follow a link from our website, cooperadio.org/redeye.